COVID-19 shuts down much of Indiana and the country. Disruptions to business, education, plus an electoral impact, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 20th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana took steps to help address those affected by the COVID-19 pandemic as the crisis unfolded day by day and even minute by minute. The week began with the state's first death from coronavirus, and Governor Eric Holcomb announced all bars and restaurants must close, save for takeout and delivery. As the week went on, more actions from Holcomb. All schools, public and non-public, closed through at least May 1st. Standardized tests canceled for this school year. State income tax filing and payments delayed until July 15th. Small businesses eligible to apply for disaster loans. And Holcomb says the state is hoping to broaden its unemployment laws, including allowing those who file late to still get benefits.
And we are all trying to make sure that all of the resources are going to get to that individual who, you know, the employee who may have been laid off or his world's changed, and the employer who had to lay that individual off.
The governor is also banning any utility company from shutting off service during the health crisis and stopping any foreclosure or eviction proceedings. Is the state going far enough to truly address this crisis? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. As you can see, we are using our old set without the desk to abide by the CDC's social distancing guidelines. And if you're listening to this program, you just learned that we had a desk and that we don't anymore again. So, Ann Delaney,
we should have burned these couches like Ann and I wanted to.
Ann Delaney, these are sweeping moves from the governor, mirroring many that we've seen across the country. Right. Is he on the right track?
You know, the sweeping moves are a week later than we've seen in a lot of other jurisdictions. But he's on the right track for those. But he's not going far enough. For example, he's got on his desk that landlord bill that allows tenants to be evicted. He should veto that. I mean, we're talking about a crisis here where people may not even be able to pay their rent, and signing that would send exactly the wrong message. And otherwise, you know, Indiana always lags behind. When we went into this crisis, we were 48th out of 50th in public health spending, and we're seeing that. We're not having as many tests as Kentucky is having, and they have a smaller population. I mean, there are things here that we need that aren't being done, and he ought to be an advocate for us with Washington. The idea that the president tells the governors to get the respirators on their own is ridiculous. He ought to be standing up and saying, Mr. Vice President, you're a governor here. We need help. We need respirators. We need masks. We need to protect our health care people, and we can't get it done by ourselves.
A lot of what Anne just talked about obviously comes from the federal government and other places. Do you feel like Indiana is getting what it needs? And if it's not, is it time for the governor and others to say that out loud?
Well, I think the federal government's been obviously very active this week, as is state government. Now, you can argue that it's too late, we should have seen this come, and we'll figure all that out on the back end. Those conversations are taking place, whether they're taking place in public or behind the scenes, where the state is, in fact, advocating for SBA relief for small businesses. That grant just came through, the first of what will be many of those grants and those dollars to come in. So, yeah, I think Governor Holcomb, I mean, if you just look at the executive order yesterday, that doesn't allow people to be evicted or homes to be foreclosed on and mirrored the federal government legislation. Extended the state, mirrored the flexibility in paying state income taxes to July 15th, so there's certainty there. The executive order yesterday, I mean, it covered a dozen state agencies, right, and the biggest ones, to make accommodations for Hoosiers as they're going to be financially strained and have to figure out, you know, how they're going to run their lives for the next, for some period of time.
The governor shut down bars and restaurants, except for obviously delivery and carry out. We've seen other states, though, go a lot farther than that, ordering effectively all businesses that are non-essential, so other than like grocery stores and that sort of thing, to shut down. We haven't seen any orders like that here. Obviously, the governor is encouraging a lot of things, but does he need? But even a lot of his orders started out as suggestions. Does he need to be a little more decisive, for lack of a better word, up front with some of these things?
Well, I think you can't say he hasn't been decisive. I think he, even in the final hours of the session, you know, he was talking to Republican leaders in the House and Senate about what the next step might be. And his indication, his sense was that he and the Department of Health already had the tools that they needed statutorily. In the wake of 9/11, there had been legislation passed by the General Assembly, which gave the governor broad power. In fact, I think it's broad enough to do everything except regulate the legal sale of firearms. That's the one thing you can't mess with if you're a governor in the state of Indiana. But and you look at other states where governors have sort of really arguably dropped the ball from the standpoint of public health. I mean, you had the Oklahoma governor who, I don't know about today, but certainly through the weekend and into the early part of the week was, you know, just sending out tweet after tweet where he and his family are out at this restaurant, crowded restaurant, and this, you know, basically encouraging people to go out and ignore these sort of. So clearly that's not.
No,
Eric
he's
Holcomb.
Not on that end of it.
And as far as starting out with suggestions, even the states now where you do have the shelter in place orders, whether it's Gavin Newsom, governor of California, whether it's Andrew Cuomo in New York.
And I believe Illinois' governor
Illinois
is about to do the same thing.
States in between. I mean, that seems to be the process. Start with volunteer action, and then depending on how the numbers shake out. I mean, Indiana, you don't want to see any cases. You don't want to see any deaths, certainly. We'll stipulate that. But we still have not seen the kinds of.
But we've only had 200 tests.
We're also,
that's the problem.
We're also far from a peak here, and everybody acknowledges that. That seems to be Holcomb's message through all of this. I mean, he's had, what, I think, 3 or 4 press conferences now about this specifically. And he keeps using the phrase, like, conditions on the ground. And that's what he's really watching for, right?
Yeah, and one of the things he stressed today was the more we follow the guidance, we can avoid the sort of more massive stuff like shelter in place. And they are indeed doing more tests. Who knows how many is enough, but we're up to 550 tests
now.
So they're.
And as we get more tests, we're also going to get more cases.
Processing them now through Eli Lilly. And so there definitely is improvement and progress being made. And I don't think anyone knows if he's doing enough because we've never been here before.
Yeah. Is that the biggest problem? Is that we're all. I mean, certainly he's following, as most governors are, following the advice of healthcare professionals, of health experts. But a lot of this is just we aren't entirely sure what to do, right?
Right, and we don't know how long it's going to last, and we don't know how desperate the situation is going to get. But we do know that we need respirators. We do know that we need masks and gowns. And he could be out there advocating publicly for those. Asking the businesses to make more, which is something the President of the United States
won't
do.
The Department of Health is managing inner transfers and hospital systems. They can see all of that.
Yeah, but
and
that's
they know
existing things. We don't have enough.
They're bringing
existing.
All that in. They're requesting all of that.
It doesn't matter. We don't have them.
They're out gathering those things.
Dr. Box has been very clear.
The Department of Health can see what's going on at those hospitals.
Yeah. Right.
They can see when they hit a certain threshold.
Fair,
they can transfer.
I don't know how much.
If they have them, they can transfer.
I don't know
them.
How much the Indiana governor saying, please, businesses, make more of these
items
is going
to
do.
You can pick up the phone to the president who has the authority to argue
sure
them to do
it. I'm sure he already has.
I'm not sure how much. We have factories being repurposed for respirators and different things that were Tesla said.
I think what frustrates people is the pace of this, that, you know, should this have all started a lot sooner?
Right.
But to your point, that's not the argument. We can't have that argument.
There's going to be a lengthy autopsy on the back end of this. I don't think we will ever do it this way again. I mean, the president at his press conference today said we've learned a lot already through the last 2 weeks of doing this. The lead editorial today in the Wall Street Journal, in the middle of all this, said we're going to have to decide as a country whether or not it's worth flushing. Like, what's the public health consequence of poverty? What are we going to deal with that over the next 6 months? So we're going to have to balance all of that. And there's going to be some substantial policy conversations to take place.
After the Ebola outbreak. And what did President Trump do? He dismantled the pandemic task force.
And we're going to have plenty of time for Ann to blame Donald Trump for everything.
Well, you know, he said he knew it was a pandemic.
Look forward to that
ago.
On future shows during the COVID-19 crisis.
Like all of them.
I do want to, before we move on, I do want to ask you, you kind of alluded to this, but we've had a couple of Republican lawmakers in the state, admittedly perhaps the most conservative lawmakers,
say the governor has no authority to be closing bars and restaurants. He's damaging the economy. He shouldn't be doing this. But there's clear statutory authority.
The governor has the authority based, again, on what was passed after 9/11. So that, again, not a lawyer, not a judge, I don't think there's any legal question there. Perhaps there's a sensitivity, though, to going to the draconian measures right off, in that you might, rather than get people to come on board through common sense and maybe some sense of community and altruism, a desire to keep other people from getting this,
yeah, I don't think
even if you're not susceptible, you don't want to push it too much, because then you get public backlash. Again, I don't know what the answer is, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get to that point. But
yeah. All right. Well, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dr. Woody Myers, who is also the former state health commissioner, says the General Assembly should be brought in for an emergency session to help address the COVID-19 crisis.
Myers says he would urge the General Assembly to help confront the COVID crisis by, for instance, passing a paid leave law for Hoosier workers. Plus,
I think we ought to immediately attack the those that are seeking to inappropriately profit from the pandemic by gouging with respect to prices.
Indiana's price gouging law only specifically applies to fuel. Legislative leaders said last week Governor Eric Holcomb assured them he didn't need special legislation to address the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mike O'Brien, does, maybe not right this second, but will Indiana perhaps need a special session?
Yeah, look, I don't blame Woody Myers for not having any idea, given his most recent experience was living in New York City. So, and then it comes to Indiana to run for governor. Now we're having a special session.
He's been living here for years, Michael.
Yeah, and he's been trying to sell his condo here for years, too.
And he also has a house here, besides that.
But really, I mean, we might, months from now. I mean, we may in the fall. I mean, we just have to see, because the legislature's role in this is going to be reappropriating dollars, maybe rewriting the budget, having to come in and do supplemental appropriations to the extent that the governor can't augment the budget, in certain areas if there isn't authority to adjust taxes when the emergency is lifted and some of those powers go away, does the legislature have to then step in? But we're not going to know any of that. I mean, the decisions that have made so far. I mean, the Department of Health is fully empowered to do what they're doing right now. He mentioned price gouging. The Attorney General is really active on that this week. Let's say something nice about Curtis Hill. He was very active on anti-gouging.
Yeah, he's trying to use every statute that he can find to
participate
this.
In this. Yeah. I understand, but he's empowered to do that. The Secretary of State's clearly empowered to manage the elections. We're going to talk about that here in a minute from that announcement this week. But the legislature may have to come back in at some point, and the city of Indianapolis is going to be in dire straits. I mean, the CIB and the Pacers and what runs the Indianapolis and therefore statewide economy is based on large groups of people gathering in Indianapolis, which we're not going to be able to do for a while, right? No. So that's going to have a tax consequence, going to have a revenue consequence. No. Some of these deals and the renovations of Bakers Field House
are coming. We won't wait until January of 2021.
And we may not be able to. So we may have to pull the legislation.
So is this the right idea but not the right time for it?
No, it's the right idea and it is the right time. As soon as the federal
government it's a violation of the gathering law.
As soon as the federal government
can't even get that many people together.
Maybe they'll all get infected and maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing.
I can't believe you make a joke like that.
You know, if the federal government finally acts, okay, and the president finally signs a bill that deals with this, then the legislature needs to come back and work at it. And the family and medical leave would be a wonderful thing to see, okay? But in the last session of the General Assembly, they couldn't even protect pregnant women with very minor little kinds of things they wanted to do. They'd need to come back, and not just because of figuring out how to allocate the federal funds, but they're going to have a revenue crisis here. We are way, way too reliant on the sales tax. And that hit, we saw what happened in 2008 with that. And this is a different kind of situation because people are frozen in their home and they're not out traveling or going to restaurants or movies or theater or anything else. And that's going to have a devastating effect on the revenue, which they're going to have to deal with by using that cash that they were going to use to build buildings.
If we had spent all that cash on every little wish and dream you've had over the last 10 years,
and the same thing with the corporate income tax cuts.
I do want to ask this, which is some of the, if like Mike said, maybe down the line we do have to have the General Assembly come back, is some of the calculation on even the timing of that going to be logistically, how do you get 150 members of the General Assembly and the staff you need to run the place in one place?
Yeah, it has to be. And you don't want to do it too early and then have to turn around a month later and do it again. I mean, I do think they need to kind of get their arms around, you know, a full agenda and not just have a bunch of people come in and dilly-dally for days upon days while we try to figure out, you know, what is best or what we need the most. So I think it's probably a good thing to sort of keep that in the back. Obviously, we might need to do it, but let's see what our full agenda would be and the proper items to address. And maybe we'd have to do things like voting from home or something like that, that they're letting some other public meetings do right now.
It sounds like Pat Bauer and Tom Kromkowski were way ahead of their
time.
Yeah,
they were, weren't they?
Mike kind of alluded to this, but the reason we don't need maybe an emergency special session right now is because Indiana's General Assembly has, over the last decade or so, plus, given a lot of power over to the governor, more than they ever had before, right?
That is very true. And in fact, the statute that we've been talking about, the one that gives the governor so much latitude to deal with these sorts of issues, it has to be, I think, re-upped every 30 days by the governor.
Yeah, the emergency declaration.
Right. There is a mechanism by which the General Assembly can say, Governor, you're pushing this too far. You know, we need to go back to our bars and our Elks Club or whatever. But ironically, I love the Elks Club. I'm not saying that. But ironically, to get that mechanism triggered, they have to come and vote on it. And, of course, it's the governor who has the power to call lawmakers back. I mean, it's sort of like what we've seen with Congress with telephonic voting. They want to pass legislation or some sort of stopgap measure so that people can vote from all over the country, but they have to come together first and have that vote on how to do it so they can vote telephonically.
I mean, it's catch-22. Just talking about this recently, that the House and Senate could easily change the rules to allow for remote voting. But they would have to vote to change their rules, and they can't vote except in person.
That's the catch 22.
Yeah. Walk into the chamber, walk out of the chamber.
Right.
All said, though, I think the General Assembly, there will be past the emergency. I should say the medical emergency when these other issues come to the fore. And by then, I don't think we'll be necessarily
I'm not sure that's true. In terms of unemployment insurance and things like that, that may require action to end leave and things like that may require.
I mean, on unemployment, to be fair, we have about $850 million in that trust fund. It'll go like that, and we'll have to borrow from the feds just like we did
There's
not a lot that the legislature can do on unemployment
They can expand it for longer.
Eligible, possibly, that sort of thing. But anyway, Mike teed this up a little bit ago, but Indiana's 2020 primary election will move to June 2nd in response to COVID-19 concerns, an unprecedented change announced this week by Governor Eric Holcomb, Secretary of State Connie Lawson, and state party leaders.
Lawson says county clerks have reported trouble recruiting poll workers and concerns about health and safety logistics to hold Indiana's primary election May 5th. She says pushing the date back to June 2nd will ensure the state holds a, quote, safe, secure, and fair election. As part of the shift, the Election Commission is expected to allow all Hoosiers to vote by mail without an excuse, though Lawson says some clerks are worried they don't have the capacity for that.
That's one reason why we agreed to leave the in-person option.
Lawson says the state will still need poll workers June 2nd, and she hopes people out of work because of COVID-19 will get involved.
I hope that we can recruit and pay them to work our elections.
The Election Commission will make other changes next week to comply with the shift, like moving back the voter registration deadline.
Nikki Kelly, is this the right move?
I don't think anyone knows. Yeah. And it might be. I think a lot of people like the idea of more in-person voting, but there were still logistical problems about whether we could literally get $4.5 million. You know, absentee applications out there and back in time, even if
and
we
then
kept
ballots out and
right.
Back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they were trying to kind of thread the needle with both options. The only criticism I've heard is maybe we could have waited a few weeks to decide and see how things changed. But other than that, I think everyone recognizes the health problems of gathering a bunch of people, especially when a lot of poll workers are in these at-risk categories.
Yeah.
To, you know, be at the polls for voting.
And that's something clerks have been saying is that, I mean, finding poll workers is not an easy task in a normal year. And finding poll workers who generally are older folks, because a lot of them are retired and not working, mm-hmm. is proving to be almost impossible right now. I've heard the same criticism that Nikki just brought up, is that couldn't we have waited a little longer and seen how things shake out? But we really couldn't afford to wait much longer because the mechanisms for a lot of these things start happening like right now.
Yeah, the machinery of the electoral process is what voters certainly are exposed to is the notion of going down on election day and, you know, it sort of magically happens and the machines appear and the well, in the old days you'd pull back the curtain. Now I guess we're curtainless, but you punch whatever you're going to do, you do your screen, and then it just goes away for another year and you don't think about it. Clearly, if you're involved in the process, as the Secretary of State is, as county clerks are across the state, they can tell you it's a lot more involved than that. And so I think a decision has to be made early on. Ironically, this pushes us to a time when other states have, with some significance, as much as there will be left in this campaign probably, Ohio and others, that June 2nd date could be a pretty interesting date, I suppose.
Yeah, if that Democratic presidential primary is still contentious, it might have an impact. But is this really the only thing they could do?
Well, I think both parties came together. That should be noted. Both parties came together.
Or at least
Both party leaders came together and did this, which is the way that should go. I don't think they could have waited. I mean, we're about 2 weeks away from early voting beginning. And John's right. I mean, I was county chairman for 8 years and worked closely with the county clerk, and now you've got counties that are shutting down and they can't go to work. Yeah. And so then, and you don't know when they're going to be able to go back, or when the county is going to lift those emergency declarations, and they can go back in. You can't send them back in the day before the election. Expect it all to, you know, flip a switch, and now we're having an election. You know, there's timelines and statutory timelines that have to be followed that are now all being kicked 30 days. So there's an established process. They just moved it 30 days. And what we just saw in Florida was, in spite of all this, they had, I think, their highest voter turnout ever in that
primary.
Although
they did massive vote by mail, which could potentially do, but we're not sure.
No, we could do it. They're taking away the restrictions on absentee ballots.
Right.
But like in counties like Marion, Joe Hogsett and Bob Ossoli have both said they're going to mail out absentee applications to all the voters.
Well, they also want to put those. They also want to. I think they're also asking the Election Commission to make the application process for that put it online, which will help a lot of people do it.
Absolutely,
for sure.
But the application process then can be done, and the ballots can go out. And you know, it's a very easy way that a lot of states have used for years to get more people to vote. Our voter turnout's abysmal, so this is a good thing. And then they need to have voting centers. Is what they need to do, not have the each precinct voting, but have voting centers all around the state.
I believe counties have statutory authority to combine precincts right now.
They have that.
County Lawson alluded to.
But then we need to do more of that, so it makes it easier to find the poll workers.
Let me ask you this: I started with the question, is this the right move? And I alluded to the fact that the party leaders came together, because I've heard that a lot of folks on the Democratic Central Committee are not happy with John Zoda's decision.
You know, there's not a lot of folks. Obviously, he has support on the Democratic Central Committee, but there are always people who say, we could have gotten this done on May the 2nd, and what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, so that's a legitimate concern on their part. There are the resources, and there's the ability. It's money, and the state can fund this. The state could put money in this the same as they could.
I'm not sure what the state can afford to
fund right now. Well, they could do that the same as they could voting machines, but
they
don't choose
to. If we had proceeded, though, because of the mechanics, the challenges that have been discussed, you think turnout is low before with our record-setting low turnout?
I actually think turnout will be higher this time.
Well, because of the voting, I'm saying if they had gone ahead and done it on May 5th, that schedule, that
would have been higher. I think it still would have been higher.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Indiana right to postpone its May 5th primary election until June 2nd? A yes or B no? Last week's question, are you confident in Governor Eric Holcomb's ability to manage the coronavirus crisis? 47% of you say yes, 53% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of elections, even as the Democratic presidential primary does look close to being effectively over, with former Vice President Joe Biden surging further into the lead this week, the party itself is still grappling with a fundamental philosophical split. The coronavirus pandemic perhaps perfectly distills the competing philosophies headlined by the major two remaining Democratic presidential contenders. On the one hand, Senator Bernie Sanders, who says COVID-19 exposes what he says are the bigger weaknesses and dysfunctionality of the healthcare system.
We are the only major country on earth not to guarantee healthcare to all people. We're spending so much money, and yet we are not even prepared for this pandemic.
But Joe Biden says the revolution Sanders wants will disrupt efforts to address the country's immediate problems.
I can tell you from experience being a significant consumer of health care with my sons, my family, all the things we've gone through. What people want is hope, and they need it now, not 4 years from now. And Bernie still hasn't told us how he's going to pay for it.
And, Eleni, even as Joe Biden appears to be the nominee, do Democrats have to reconcile with this schism ahead of November?
No, I think they have to work towards how to make health care more affordable and more available, and that's exactly what Biden's saying.
Is this schism perhaps the best shot Donald Trump has at re-election?
Joe Biden said people need hope and they need it now. I thought they needed respirators and masks based on what Ann said before, but...
Well, they're not getting either from
Donald Trump. I hope these guys are staying healthy. I hope they have them locked in a hospital room somewhere.
They are in the high-risk category. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.